This is Mick Collins, resident new guy here at the Bicast. Since I have my own music-based show, it should come as no surprise that I wanted to do something involving the bisexual spectrum in music. I doubt much of this will be new ground for most, but it'd be nice to talk about it. When I first conceived this bit, I had this vague idea of talking about some of the bisexual musicians of the past. But as I dug into it, I was surprised at the struggle I found myself in. I dug through these people's lives, and in many ways, their struggles, too. But these people, flesh and blood, they were undeniably musicians to the bone. They were their music, and the music doesn't care. I guess that's why I've always had a borderline obsession with music. Music doesn't care. Music doesn't care about your sexual orientation. It doesn't care about your gender. Music doesn't care about the money in your pocket. The lyrics may talk of love or hate, but we interpret it how we wish as we listen. A guitar solo, a background synth fill, a full violin concerto, be it what it will, it fills us with what we need and what we want. Music doesn't care. So it is with this tussle that I continue on. If music doesn't care, why should I care about the sexuality and self-identification of these musicians? Why should I care how anyone is identified in this issue? I should care because people only gain acceptance from the majority by having people similar to them paraded out in a positive light. It's a sad but true fact, especially so in our media codependent society. The other thing that occurred to me is that these people also need to be celebrated. They touched us one way or another with their hard work, their art, and their lives. Celebrate them because of their bisexuality, and celebrate them because of whatever experiences they had as a bisexual person that led them to make the music they did. A side note on terminology. I use bisexual as a blanket term, and you'll just have to forgive me for it. In this time of self-actualization, we've started using many new terms to more accurately describe the complex ideas and fluidity of gender and sexuality. I'm out of the loop, but learning. Just understand it's all about love to me, and love, like music, doesn't care. Therein lies the absolute beauty of it. In the beginning. To me, the beginning of all existence, the biblical Genesis, started with a black man from Mississippi who sat on a stool in a hotel room in San Antonio, Texas. In front of him was a mic and on his lap a guitar. Facing a corner to enhance the sound, he played. Robert Johnson's blues begat the world, and it was good. Robert Johnson was a voracious womanizer, and it most likely killed him. He was not, to anyone's knowledge, anything more than a straight bluesman. But he, like Charlie Patterson and all those other early musicians of blues and jazz, started something great. It was the first and only time God and the devil agreed on something. In the early days, blues and jazz were often holding hands when to intertwine with each other. Both forms were often seen as bastions of masculinity, and finding bisexually identified males is difficult. So we all know Josephine Baker and Bessie Smith. Their lovers, both men and women, are often celebrated in their own music. Like David Bowie and Lou Reed, who came later, these are gimmies. They are the free space on the bisexual bingo card. Gertrude Pidgett became known as Ma Rainey after her marriage to Will Rainey in 1904. Together, they toured with minstrel shows, and Ma's popularity increased as a talented and energetic blues shouter. Mentor to Bessie Smith, and in some accounts, kidnapper, seducer, or lover, she helped start Bessie's career while forwarding her own. Ma Rainey played with the likes of Louis Armstrong and Tommy Dorsey. She recorded songs such as Prove It to Me, which did little to disguise her bisexuality. Lucille Bogan was third in the trio of early blues women stars, including Rainey and Smith, was another one that became awfully suspect with her body tunes and tales of carousing. Songs like Shave 'em Dry and Beady Woman's Blues, which takes the perspective of a quote-unquote bull dyke, shows that her taste did not tend towards just one gender. There is, of course, the estimable Alberta Hunter, whose flirtations with both men and women didn't go unnoticed. She kept it out of her music to a greater degree than the more open singers like Rainey and the rest, but the rumors and stories from the other side of the microphone told another tale. Before I continue, a small aside. History is fickle, only because we weren't there and we're not these people. All sides of the spectrum have taken these personalities as their own. Some have championed Bessie Smith and Lucille Bogan as lesbian icons. And maybe they were. But I'll continue to list these folks as I will under the bisexual spectrum, given that what I've come across, and also because bisexuality is just that, a spectrum and not a box. Body blues tunes were not uncommon. In fact, they were often the norm in the small watering holes and bars. largely populated by people of color, they didn't have to worry about the nervous white censorship of the more mainstream clubs. Songs that contained innuendo were less common than songs that came right out and talked frankly about when, where, and how they wanted to have sex. Non-straight themed songs like Sissy Man Blues and The Boy in the Boat were traditional songs that many a blues musician had in their repertoire from the 1920s on. It's hard to say if they were singing them to purely be tongue-in-cheek or if they felt some connection with the context. I suspect there was more autobiography going on than many of them would admit to. These were not the most open of times, or open of groups, especially for males. Bits of talk here and there persisted, but for the most part, male musicians at the time maintained their bisexual relations well under wraps. War in post-war America was one of mixed values. To some, there was a pervasive feeling that you were either status quo or subversive. As jazz and blues went into the mainstream music, the raunchy tunes and outperformers either stayed underground or simply vanished. Jazz was the dominant music of the time, taking less from blues and stretching out on its own into swing, jump, and bebop. Pop music was often indistinguishable from sanitized jazz. For the sake of enjoying irony, though, now might be a good time to mention that the term jazz started out as a euphemism for sex. Billy Eckstein was born of a mixed-race couple and was a multi-instrumentalist who started out doing vocals and playing trumpet in Earl Hines' band. Earl Father Hines, it should be noted for fellow music geeks, either played with or helped to start almost every jazz luminary that practically ever lived. Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, and Charlie Parker were just a few. Billy Eckstein ventured off on his own and started his own big band, which became just as influential as his mentors. Many of the same musicians that started in Hines' band often took a turn in Eckstein's band as well. And talk of Eckstein's homosexuality is not uncommon, but then there are hints that he also had affairs with women such as Lena Horne, Sarah Vaughan, and, of course, his two wives. The interesting thing is that any poke at the possible bisexuality of major players such as Dizzy, Charlie Parker, Art Blakey, or other male jazz musicians seemed to be linked with time in Billy's band or in his association. These kind of sort of well, maybe not, jabs at possible non-straight affairs were also directed at Miles Davis and Count Basie. The debate still rages on what the first rock and roll song is. For me, rock and roll started when Big Mama Thornton belted out those prophetic words, "You ain't nothing but a hound dog." From there, it was all downhill, which is exactly where rock belonged. Gritty, rough, and scary to mainstream America, rock is that dark undercurrent that makes us feel so good when we should feel so guilty. Born from blues and suckled on elements of jazz, seemed to be made for sexual fluidity. Big Mama Thornton is rumored to have been bisexual, but it is more likely just stemmed from her penchant to wear men's suits and have a more masculine way about her. It's not an uncommon practice amongst the female blues shouters. Sister Rosetta Tharpe, though largely a gospel blues singer and bandleader, gave influence to rock and roll as well. Her picking on a Fender Strat proved that. Her output was largely in the gospel vein, but she performed nightclubs as much as she did revivals. Recording for the troops and performing with other spiritual acts, most would have been surprised had they heard the tales of her personal life, though circumspect at the time. Later accounts came out about her affection with both men and women. Given her genre, it was probably quite advantageous to keep her sexuality behind the scenes. Sexuality behind the scenes was never a more important practice than in mid-50s America. With McCarthyism in full swing, commies and queers were public enemy number one. Often linked as one and the same in the minds of some, any sort of sexual fluidity would be met with derision and often violence. And then came rock and roll. Rumors abounded about the sexuality of almost all of those early stars, including Buddy Holly, Elvis, and Chuck Berry. Most were just unfounded barbs to try and discredit and quiet the new jangling addiction of the youth. But then there was Little Richard. An early and outrageous symbol of this new ambiguity that would come, he spent his long career in and out of closets due to faith and other personal reasons. His relationships with both men and women and his struggle with both is a good example of personal pitfalls we all face. The pressures of society, faith, and industry telling him to pick one is not exclusive to the famous. Despite, or because of, Richard would become a big influence on performers and bands that would eschew the conventional norms of orientation and gender. As the 50s came to a close and the 60s began, the sanitization began anew. All those trailblazing rock stars were either shipped off to the army, jail, found God, or simply rolled over. The established status quo returned to its comfort zones. Middle America breathed easier again until the mid-60s. In a studio in England, a sound engineer tore the cone of a guitar speaker with a razor, while a young band called the Kinks tried to reclaim what was theirs. Rock became gritty again. It found its fire. Dave Davies, guitarist and brother to Ray Davies, rampaged through All Day and All of the Night, and You Really Got Me. As the Kinks became one of the biggest rock bands to emerge from that time, Dave was seeing women, as well as other white male blues revivalists, such as the openly gay Long John Baldry. And to be honest, with songs like the trans-positive ditty Lola, it should have been a sign of things to come. Many of the blues gods and goddesses of yesteryear found new recognition in this new generation. Rolling Stones, The Animals, John Mayall, Eric Clapton, Janis Joplin, scores of others covered blues tunes left and right, allowing their influences to come back from obscurity. Alberta Hunter, Sister Rosetta, even Ma Rainey, though long gone at this point, were dusted off, lauded, and able to enjoy one more go-around of living the music. This time they had less to lose and more to share on the cusp of a time where hiding who you were was becoming less and less important. Female crooner Dusty Springfield and the goddess of the new Texas blues, Janis Joplin, made decisions to no longer hide their sexuality. In the Stonewall era, a new consciousness came about. It was at this time the pillars of bisexual and fluid music, Bowie, Reed, Laura Nero, and others emerged. Glam rock, punk, and all the rest were just waiting in the wings with musicians who had no interest in hiding who they were and celebrated their diversity. Frontman for The Who, Pete Townshend, has talked openly about his bisexuality, and he has even gone so far as saying that he won't be classified just as a man. Pete Shelley of the Buzzcocks, elder statesman of early punk, has been out since early in his own career. Rock is old enough now to receive AARP, but refuses to admit it. It stays young and keeps the rest of us young, no matter how much gray hair I keep finding in my beard. And despite the efforts of record companies and media juggernauts, it still maintains its function of thumbing its nose to convention and status quo. As acceptance slowly works to become the norm, more and more out musicians are hitting the scene. They are unafraid to talk about it in interviews and in their own music. Especially in their music. Because remember, music doesn't care. The beauty of music is the reflections of ourselves that shows us. But music doesn't need to care. It just reminds us that we do.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Bynet USA or the Bicast crew.